Welcome all sports fans. On this podcast,
no sport is left behind.
I'm Justin Williams.
I'm Cabrera Duran, and this is our brother from Down Under,
me, Wallace Bruce.
We are the Pro Sports Podcasters,
filling you in on the latest news from the world of sports.
Okay, so you want to get back into the world championships of test cricket.
Right.
This is similar to soccer and where you have like qualifying.
Well, that's the thing, Cole, because there aren't qualifiers for this. So cricket's a little bit rigid in terms of who plays.
There's only 12 teams, right?
Right. So you have to win approval from the rule makers, and that doesn't happen very often. So there's no qualifiers. You just play your series over the calendar. Points are earned that way. At the end of it, there is a one-off test match. So that's the final. So that's between the number one ranked and the number two ranked teams in world cricket. New Zealand, based on the current rankings, have already qualified.
Now, hold on. They've already qualified. Wait. They've already qualified. How come? Like, is there only X number of matches left?
There's only one series left. There was two.
Okay.
It was meant to be Australia against South Africa, but because of concerns with the South African variant, the Australians pulled out of their series. They said, we want this postponed. So I'm going to get to that as well. In the meantime, there's only one outstanding series that is going to decide the second team, and that's currently in India and England. So that's a four-test series. England won the first test. India won the second. If the series ends in a draw, Australia will qualify.
Oh, really?
That's right. If England win the next two tests and it finishes 3-1, they will qualify. And then if India win 3-1, they will qualify. Are you keeping up?
No, I'm keeping up.
Because don't forget, cricket historically was a way for everyone outside of England to get back at their colonial superiors, if you will. That's one reason why.
Oh yeah, no. I know there's a lot of rivalry against England from multiple sides when it comes to cricket.
So that's why if someone can get knock off the English, they'll do it. So for India, India will naturally want to get into the final. Would they prefer Australia or England? I don't know about that one. Maybe they'll prefer England, but I don't know. I feel like that they'd rather just get in, and if they can't get in, then yeah, you'd have to see. As for England, would they prefer Australia? Now, the game itself, the final, is in England. It's at a stadium called Lord's in London, so that's considered the home of cricket. Would England prefer Australia to be there over India, or vice versa? I don't know. I think both teams just want to get in, and if they can't, well, they'll probably throw their toys out of the pram and go home.
Well, I also know, looking at it from the political side of things, I also know that the big three in cricket are all for getting cricket in the Olympics, except for India. For whatever reason, India is against the idea of cricket becoming an Olympic sport.
Right, so I feel like that would be because of the calendar, and that's cash reasons. So the big three is at the moment is Australia, England, and India. So Africa is part of the big four, but I guess they're not playing as many matches as they used to, and the team is going through some transitions and not as strong as it used to be. But Australia, England, India. England, the inventors of the game. Australia, because they were competitively strong, and in India because of their financial strength with the way they can engineer TV revenue. India is the cash cow. You want India coming to play your country because you're going to get hundreds of millions of eyes on your series when India comes to play.
Yeah, on the event.
Right. So that's part of the reason why they're not so keen on the Olympics, because in the long form of the game, as you just said, you want India to come and play test cricket. In the shorter forms of the game, India is very powerful. So in what they call one-day cricket and also 2020 cricket, India has a tournament called the Indian Premier League in 2020 cricket, and that's very lucrative. So players, when they're not playing for their country, will often go to India for 5 or 6 weeks. They'll earn a pretty good sum of money for playing limited overs cricket.
When you say limited overs, this is the T10 or T20.
This is the T20
cricket system, right?
T20, yeah. So that's the
T20. And how long is the average T20 game?
3 hours. So it's 20 overs each side. It's very much
made. And T10 is half that.
T10 is not as common. The other form of the game that is more prevalent is, and this was the precursor to T20, is one day cricket. So one day cricket is generally 8 hours, 50 overs each. And that's where the Cricket World Cup is drawn from. The best one day cricket team in the world. There is a T20 World Cup as well, but one day cricket, for me, is where it's at. And then, coming back to your question, Kobe. So you've got a congested calendar with all these tournaments across the three forms of the game. If you throw in the Olympics, something that where the revenue doesn't really come back to the cricket federations themselves, it goes to NBC or the host.
Now I see exactly what you're getting at, because then India has the largest amount of revenue to lose.
Yes.
By sending players to the Olympics.
Right. They'd rather hold a tournament like an Indian Premier League or a test series against Australia or South Africa or something like that, then lose their players to some Olympic tournament when they're not going to earn much. It'll be good for exposure. It'll be good for the game because more countries will get involved, but revenue won't be there. So it's a little bit short-sighted in my view.
Yeah, no, I get the short-sightedness there, because I look at it like, so soccer is the number one game in the world. Most popular game in the world is soccer. And soccer, just the way it's played, allows itself to work well on a Olympic stage. And then cricket used to be the second most popular game in the world, but it's dropped to third behind basketball. And I believe that's entirely due to basketball's exposure in the Olympics.
So there's that. So we can thank Michael Jordan for that. Because remember, the Dream Team, before the Dream Team, it wasn't really professionals that were playing. It was amateurs. But Michael Jordan globalized it. But also, basketball is easy to play. It's accessible. You can go and pick up your basketball, and as long as there's a ring or something to shoot it into, you're good. Whereas with cricket, you need equipment. A little bit like hockey. You need your pads, your stick. In cricket, the equivalents of that. You need your helmet in hockey as well. The same with cricket, if you're a batsman. So
it does have a restriction entry based on the cost of play. Mm. But I still don't think that's enough to significantly hurt it, right? I mean, like you mentioned hockey. Hockey does not suffer because it's expensive. You still have enough nations basically represented to play it. And again, I think more the format is a restrictive property when it comes to cricket. Although for it to reach the Olympics, I think cricket in the Test 10, the T10 format, is the most likely to succeed on an Olympic stage. And like you said, I believe it would draw a lot of eyes to the sport, and you would see it grow quickly as a result of that.
So I'll meet you halfway there, because cricket was in the Commonwealth Games. It was in a 50-50 format, because 2020 hadn't existed back then in 1998, when at the Kuala Lumpur Games, cricket had a short stint. So in terms of actually getting it done, that's not too much of an issue. They just need to make sure the host has a stadium that's sufficient. And with a short format like T20, for me, I think T20 is more wholesome than T10. I think T10 is too short to be an Olympic competition.
Now, I understand you saying that because you're a traditionalist and you've grown up with the game. But for someone, say, like myself, who is being introduced to the game through the Olympics, I think 10 tests of cricket would be enough to develop an appreciation for the sport.
As an exhibition, sure, but for practicality, I'm going to stop you there, because T10, that means 10 overs. So that means three players on the team are probably bowling, maybe four. With T20, you can have a bit more strategy. And it's only an extra hour and a half of play, if I'm not mistaken. So you can still get in three or four games at the same arena, which is how the Olympics usually work. If you have maybe two ovals, then you can get women's and men's running pretty smoothly over the 12 to 16 days or whatever it is. So cricket needs to realize that there is an opportunity. The Olympics are coming back to Paris. Paris is probably too soon. And
the target is 2028 in Los Angeles. That's the target.
The Americans, they've dabbled a little bit in it. America loves to win. So if cricket is on the agenda, Americans will start playing cricket. And then you have 350, 370 million new eyes potentially to get involved in the game that may not already be involved.
Well, yeah, you have a massive market available to you if it catches on at all.
Right, and NBC can have a look at it as well. I believe they'll still have the Olympics by then. So, yeah, and LA has a number of stadiums.
I think T10 is most likely because whenever they introduce a new sport, they like to try and fit it into time slots where there isn't other major things happening.
Yeah, yeah.
The shorter the duration, the better. I think that's also why 3-on-3 basketball is going to be in this Olympics.
And it's going to be good.
Right? A 3-on-3 basketball match is like 10, 15 minutes to run it. So 10, 15 minutes.
Mm.
So you could literally sandwich it in between major events. And for someone who's got nothing to watch, is like, oh, they got the 3-on-3 basketball. That should be fun. You watch it for 10, 15 minutes. It's done. Mm. You get to see the result. And then you move on to what you're really interested in. And I know how you said, like, you know, I think one of the reasons, too, why LA is a target is because of the time difference with the primary markets.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
They could hold the cricket matches at weird hours and still get the same viewership because their largest market is the other side of the world.
So that's the thing. There is an opportunity there. There is talk that the 2032 Olympics could be back in Asia, particularly back in Australia, but that's yet to be seen. I guess one thing I wanted to say about Test cricket is back. Test cricket, for years, has been on the precipice with the encroachment of one-day cricket, 50-50 cricket, to be specific, and 2020 cricket. It has pushed the longer form of the game out to pasture. It was considered too long, boring, unless you're someone like me who grew up with it, it wasn't accessible. But with the introduction of the World Test Championship, that's revived the game. That's made Test cricket fun to watch because you know they're playing towards something. Yes, there's a series happening in India and England right now, which is exciting in itself. But on another level, one of three teams is going to go to the World Test Championship final in England. And not just that, it makes them more competitive. You know you're playing for something each series because there are some series code where it's like they're mailing it in. It's like, okay, Team A is going to beat Team B, and do we need to watch this because we know what's going to happen. But with this Test Championship, there's all to play for. And I think it's great for the game. Cricket has been revitalized.
Now, you said that the Australian team has opted out of their game with South Africa
right.
because of COVID concerns.
That was the reason that was given. Because of the strain of the virus, it was a health and safety issue. As you know, the coronavirus has hit some parts of the world harder than others. Australia and New Zealand have managed it very well. And the position was taken that it was not safe to go to South Africa. Now, the South Africans, they're not happy about this because this is a big three nation and they don't get as much cricket as they used to. It's gone down a little bit. So to miss out on a team like Australia, that's rough. That's going to hit revenue. Especially the year of COVID, they weren't playing much cricket as it was. They miss out on this golden ticket. So they are trying to reschedule it. But as I said, this is a congested cricket schedule nowadays because in addition to tests, you have limited overs cricket, and then you have these tournaments, 2020, like the Indian Premier League. Because that's the premier 2020 tournament. There's also the Caribbean Premier League. There's also tournaments in Australia, New Zealand. Every country has their own 2020 tournament to attract players and get fans in the stands, hopefully.
Yeah, but see, you've also indicated that now they're sitting on the sidelines and hoping that England and India play to a draw. I'm just wondering if they actually had played South Africa and won, Would that have guaranteed their ticket to the final or no?
Well, put it this way. Because Australia and South Africa didn't play, that guaranteed that New Zealand would qualify. Now, if Australia had made the trip to South Africa, I see where you're going. I see where you're going with this, that maybe Australia did it as a tactical thing. If they sit at home, maybe they can get into the final without having to go to South Africa. I would tend to lean on the side of no. Australians are pretty competitive, and they would have fancied themselves to get a good result in South Africa that would get them into the final and not rely on India and England. What you're suggesting reminds me of? It reminds me of Euro 2004. It was Sweden and Denmark. They're playing in Portugal, and they knew that if one of them won, the other one would have to go home, and Italy would qualify with them to the next round. So Sweden wins, they qualify with Italy. Denmark wins, they qualify with Italy. But if they draw, they both go through and the Italians go home. So that's what they did.
That's right.
they sent the Italians home.
Well, I mean, I don't think it was on purpose. I mean, it couldn't have been on purpose.
Cool, but I think it was on purpose. If you go and watch that goalless draw back in that tournament, it was on purpose. And considering the number of times the Italians have drawn their way to the next round of tournaments, I think we'll just let it slide.
Yeah, poetic justice.
Right, exactly right.
No, but that's what I was wondering. I was wondering if sitting out maybe was a tactical move, but you're saying no, it wasn't.
No,
And do you happen to know what the results were the last time Australia played South Africa?
Yes. Now, this is the irony. This was when that scandal happened. It was 2018. Australia lost in South Africa. Home advantage is definitely a thing in Test cricket because the fields definitely favour the home team and the players that are usually in the squad at the time. I think it was 2018.
Because it favors the bowlers, right?
Yeah, the pitches are normally done up to favor the bowlers of the home team. There's no real neutrality or whatever going on.
But yes.
In South Africa, it was 2018, they last played Australia at home. And that was when the sandpaper, what they call sandpaper gate, happened. Sandpaper gate changed the game for Australia, as I said. Because ball tampering and match fixing, As it is in other sports, everyone's trying to find an edge. You know, in football, the Patriots were widely accused for years. So the Spygate, Deflategate, what else is there? The Tuck Rule. Okay, the Tuck Rule may not have been them specifically, but teams trying to find an edge. You got pine tar in baseball, in basketball. In recent years, it's been flopping, but in cricket, this team was accused of using sandpaper to doctor the ball.
Now, has that happened before on a world level?
Yes, I have. I've heard of sawdust being left in pockets, and also, what was the other one? I feel like someone had some sort of metal thing like staples or something in their pocket, and then, you know, just rub the ball up against the outside of the pocket, knowing that it'll rough up the ball quicker. Because in cricket, in Test cricket, they change the ball every 80 overs. Or they change the ball if it's too scuffed up. So sometimes if you're in a bad funk as a team that's fielding, you know, teams will try whatever they need to do. You can use your sweat, or you can use your mouth to load the ball, or to get the ball moving that way. I guess natural means. Okay. So that was called into question in 2005. 2005 was when England played Australia in a test series, which is called the Ashes. Now, the English players were using cough lollies. And they would, you know, suck on the lolly, and then they would use the composition from that and saliva to load the ball. And that's how they were getting the ball to swing.
They were using cough drops?
Yeah. Now, that was considered legal because cough drops, you know, English weather, people have sore throats and whatnot. That was considered okay. But sandpaper, definitely not. Absolutely not. There's no need for sandpaper on the field. You can't do that. Oh, I should point out, it was actually... it actually wasn't a world cricket that handed down the suspension. Because of the outrage in Australia at the time, Australian cricket came out and suspended the players heavily for 2 years.
They punished their own people.
They were so outraged with what happened. And the other countries were just having a laugh. Because, as I said, Australia has a reputation, play fair, win fair. So when someone tries anything or is accused or convicted of match fixing, Australia is one of the first countries to come out and smack them. Like, you guys cheat. And, you know, they take the high road. So when this happened, the other countries, they were lining up.
Oh, yeah, to throw jabs.
Yeah, I think someone in New Zealand or England was saying, look, you Australians, you become so bad at cricket, you don't even know how to cheat properly. People were lining up to smack them at that time.
Now, hold on. It was one individual specifically that got nailed, right?
It was three, actually. So there was a gentleman by the name of Cameron Bancroft. So he was the guy left holding the sandpaper, if you will. He actually went to my high school. Okay. We actually went to the same high school in Perth. Interesting aside. Anyway, moving on. So Cam Bancroft, he's a batsman. He was holding the sandpaper. He was instructed by the vice captain at the time, David Warner, who's also a batsman, to do this. Now, apparently the captain of the day, Steve Smith, was aware of it. He turned a blind eye. He's like, okay, you guys want to do it, fine, but I don't want to know. What does that remind me of? It reminds me of the Houston Astros.
That's right.
Yeah, the garbage can incident, where Alex Cora has his TV set up so that signs can be stolen, and then someone's smashing a garbage can before the pitch is delivered to the batters for Houston, especially at the home games, but I believe they were doing it all over. And the manager at the time, AJ Hinch, was like, okay, you guys can do it, but I want to know about it. So Cora, who was the bench manager at the time, is doing his thing. Houston, as we know, win that World Series.
And easily.
Yeah, I guess we can call them the Houston Asterix from now on. Because as far as I'm concerned, that one doesn't count.
So all three guys get disciplined.
Mm. And, oh, the coach also stepped down. I forgot about that. Yeah, the coach stepped down.
And what year was this?
2018.
So my question is, are any of those three back on the team?
Smith and Warner are back in the team. And Bancroft came back, but he's been in and out of the team.
Okay, so when an opponent plays them now, what are the rules regarding goading a player? Just like talking shit to a guy. So if you got a couple guys on the team that you know have been suspended for cheating, if they're on the opposing team I'm playing, I'm probably going to say a few things in their ear just to try and throw them off. Is that allowed?
It's very much part of the game of cricket. It's sledging. It's very much a thing.
So it's okay to talk shit during a game, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you're batting, you usually have four or five guys fielding behind you, and they will be trying to get in your head while you're batting to try and put you off, get you out. So you'll hear a number of things under the sun. Of course they're going to bring up sandpaper.
Now, when are the referees allowed to step in?
I guess when it's about to come to blows. You don't
Oh, see, really?
You don't see fighting in cricket. It's not. That's not a thing. That's not gentlemanly. So that doesn't happen.
And do they eject players in cricket?
I've seen bowlers get pulled out if they've been warned about the way they're bowling and it's considered dangerous. I've seen them get pulled out of the bowling rotation so they can't bowl for the rest of the innings. But have I seen a player get ejected? No, not from memory.
Okay.
But again, players don't fight. You might have sledging get to the point where players come close to each other, but the umpires usually step in at that point.
Now, I know you're biased. I know you want to see Australia in the final.
Mm.
But if it's not Australia, who would you want to see face New Zealand?
I would prefer India, to be honest. But there is a storyline with New Zealand and England. So let's take our minds back to the 2019 Cricket World Cup, which was hosted by England. So New Zealand, they'd lost the 2015 final in Australia, but they've kept a pretty strong core from that team. So they go to England, and they've done very well, and they made the final. Now that final would end in a tie in one day cricket, there's three outcomes again: your team, my team, and then a tie when the score's level. Now, when there's a tie, there is a provision for extra overs to be played.
You would have that in a final, of course.
Yeah, because you have to decide the winner. So that happened, but then it was still tied. Now, for whatever reason, the rule book for cricket World Cup finals says that at that point, you do a count back.
What's a count back?
Well, they counted the number of, I believe it's number of boundaries and the number of times that each team hit sixes and fours. And then England was declared the winner on that, which I thought was absolutely ridiculous for two reasons.
So wait, so hold on. For comparison's sake, to compare that to baseball, say.
All right, so
that would mean that, I don't know, hold on, but I'm trying to follow you here. That would mean if two teams played to a final tie, let's say after X number of extra innings, and there's no time left, they would go back and count which team had more home runs, so to speak, and declare that team the winner. That's what you're saying.
More home runs than triples.
So that is kind of ridiculous. So how they got their points determined the victory, not how many points they got.
Right. So for me, that was not okay. That was not okay.
And obviously for probably all of New Zealand, that was not okay.
Yeah, especially considering they'd lost the final 4 years earlier. For them to lose like this, not okay. There's two reasons why it was not okay. One, so there was something that happened in the Super Over that was not correct. England got an extra run that was not, it should not have been awarded. But because of the excitement and the, I guess, chaos of what was happening with the first ever final going to a tie, that was missed by the umpires. So England got an extra run they should not have received. So it should never have been a tie in the first place. And then, the fact that you're counting back, as far as I'm concerned, they should have just come back the next day, or they should have just played another over. To do it on a count back like that, not okay.
How long does a super over take to play?
Not long. It's only six deliveries each side. Six legal deliveries. So it's, okay, I guess players have to put their pads on and get the batting equipment and whatnot, but it's going to be no more than 15, 20 minutes.
Oh, that's very short.
Yeah. So for me, that was a fizzer. So that's one reason why I wouldn't mind seeing England and New Zealand play in this Test Championship, because they go back to the scene of what you'd say was the crime, and New Zealand can atone for that. And then they can beat England on their home turf, and I guess they'll get some consolation for what they didn't get in 2019.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to join the Pro Sports Podcasters Facebook group, where you will be able to interact with the hosts and talk to other sports fans. Now back to the show.
It's hard to mention a scandal like Sandpaper Gate and have it not lead to talk of Brady and the Patriots. And that's exactly what happened as Nee and I continued our conversation. We'll pick it up talking about what scandal has done to specific sports and, more importantly, how sports have changed from, say, the 90s till now.
It's funny because you compare that, say, to what Brady did, right?
Right.
He gets busted for Deflategate. The only place Brady got booed when he came back after his suspension was in Baltimore, because he could have maybe cost them a Super Bowl.
Yes.
That's the only place. And it wasn't even like the whole stadium. It was like select people booed him.
Yeah.
Because they realized you got busted cheating against us in a game that was pretty damn close. That we would have gone to the Super Bowl instead of you going to the Super Bowl, and you won it as a result of that. So they booed him. But the rest of the league almost, like, the league's doing everything they can to pretend it never happened.
Right.
Right? No one mentions it anymore. Nobody. No one talks about it.
Yeah.
It's history. I don't think anybody on the field has the guts to say it to Brady. Like, if I'm playing against Brady, I'd probably bring a balloon in my pocket and let the air slowly leak out before the game, kind of thing. Yeah, seriously, right? I would make a point of, I know you cheated. Everyone knows you cheated. But nobody says shit.
You saw Tyrann Mathieu, what happened to him when he tried to draw with Brady in the Super Bowl.
Oh, everybody turned on Mathieu.
Yeah, which I found odd.
Yeah, like, he's doing his job.
They should,
right?
At the very least, it should offset. It should offset. It should have been 1-1. Okay, stop it, move on. But Mathieu was definitely seen as the guy doing the wrong thing there.
Yeah, he's the bad guy because he's not Brady. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I mean, I remember the days where linebackers, defensive ends, they would talk shit to the quarterbacks all the time. And the quarterbacks had a pretty good backbone about it, so they would talk shit right back.
Right.
Right? And it was almost a mutual respect when you got hammered by a linebacker and you popped up and was like, yeah, good hit, buddy. You got me there.
Yeah,
and
they're exactly.
Like, yeah, you know, and they respect each other for it. Now a linebacker talks shit and suddenly, what are you doing?
There's yellow flags all over the field.
Where's my flag at?
You're getting marched back 10 yards.
I don't know, man.
Maybe 15 yards, unless they're roughness. Unsportsmanlike like conduct, yeah, 15 yeah. yards.
Yeah, brutal. Just, I don't know, man. Crazy. You know, I don't know. Again, we've got so many sports that have been nerfed as far as the intensity of the game, right? Every week it comes up. We get caught back in this whole how sports have been nerfed. I mean, I guess that's something they haven't done in cricket. There's no way to nerf cricket, is there?
It's definitely, the game has definitely moved in favor of the batsman as opposed to the bowler. I feel like the bowler has less to work with.
Now, hold on. Are the batsmen legitimately in danger from the bowlers?
Historically, they were. But with the introduction of helmets, not so much. Well, historically, yes.
Okay.
They were. But at the same time, you can bowl at a batsman. Because in cricket, everyone has to bat. So when the bowlers come out to bat, they're more vulnerable, especially when someone's trying to even up something that may have happened before. So
yeah.
You could see instances where bowlers, when they come out to bat, they're getting hit. Maybe in the upper body or something like that. They're getting targeted in the shoulders or something like that. But in the limited overs cricket, the 50-50 and the 20-20, T20 side of the game, it's definitely favored the batsman because there's fielding restrictions. Okay. There's only certain places where you can
so
bowl.
So again, it's done to increase scoring.
It is done to increase scoring. It's all about the offense, not about the defense. Yeah.
It's funny, I was watching SportsCenter this morning, and they had Clippers Jazz highlights.
Yeah.
And Amy is sitting beside me having a coffee. She's watching. She's not a basketball fan, but she's watching the highlights, right? Because they're highlights. And she looks at me and goes, how come it's so easy for them to score now? Because some of the highlights, it looked like there was no defense, okay?
Right.
None.
Right.
And I said, because they changed the game. She's like, what do you mean they changed the game? I said, well, you're not allowed to touch the opponent. And when you're not allowed to touch the opponent, they can just dribble right through into the paint and put up an easy basket whenever they pretty much feel like it.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And it was highlight after highlight like that. Like, it was, like, embarrassing. They almost didn't look like highlights. It looked like test drills because there was no defense. And it's the rules that have done that to the game.
Remember in Jordan Zero when he'd run into Detroit, and if he dared go into the paint, he'd get bashed.
It was risky. It was a life decision to go into the paint.
Because he'd have two or three Pistons players just waiting for him just to body him up and let him know what's up.
Oh, yeah. Like, don't leave your feet. You leave your feet, you're going to land on your head.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Oh, woe is me. But you're never going to come into the paint again.
Mm.
And that was part of the game. Every team had to have two big men if you wanted to go to the final.
Yeah. Yeah, defense was a thing.
Right? And, I mean, guys that controlled the paint, guys that, you know, crashed the boards or took it hard to the hoop, these were physical, beast, tough specimens to go through that long a season with the amount of abuse they took in the paint.
Yeah.
Game after game after game. Your ability to withstand damage was a key factor to how much you were appreciated by your team. I mean, that's just not a factor anymore, right? Now you got guys sitting games out, right? Taking games off.
Load management. That was a buzzword of 2019.
What's that? We're playing on the East Coast this week. I'm going to sit this one out. That's a pretty hefty flight.
What? We're going to Charlotte? Nah, man. I'm taking the night off and I'm going to Charlotte.
I don't think so. I don't think so because they've got a rerun of Friends marathon happening. Like it. I mean, you would never. That is unheard of. That would never happen. You know, let's say 90s.
Mm.
No way. 90s guys are bruised up, black eyes, and they're like, "Well, next game, let's go."
Mm.
Right.
We're going to Phoenix.
It's all a completely different game, and it's happened in multiple sports.
Yeah.
And that was actually one of the things they quoted this morning, that it's, every time I hear these quotes, it always makes me sick. Mm-hmm. But they're talking about how Wilt Chamberlain's consecutive games of 25 points or more record.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, how is that even a thing? Because 25 points now, it is not a feat.
That's like a half of basketball for some of these guys. It's like the first half. 25, yeah, I'll give that the first
actually
half.
Yeah, he scored 50. He scored 50 the other game, so that was a half of basketball.
Yeah, 25 points, yeah, I'll get that in the first half. Let's go.
But I mean, if you look at how dominant Chamberlain was in his day, right? Like, Chamberlain was a physical freak in comparison to the other players on the court, right?
Yeah,
it was a challenge for him to do X number of consecutive games, 25 points.
Mm.
Nowadays, anybody with a sweet shot has a chance of breaking a record like that. Anybody. Like, you don't have to be LeBron James, right? You could just be someone with a decent shot and a key component of your team, and you could go after a record like that.
Right.
Again, it's just one of those cases where I don't think the numbers from yesteryear should be compared to now. It just, they shouldn't even be, it should be like two different generations of records that are being kept. They should keep, like, you know, generation one record, generation two record, generation three record. Break it up by whatever years you want to break it up by. But I think players of today, it's unfair to compare their accomplishments to the players of, say, 20 years ago. In many sports.
Oh,
many.
Yeah.
You know, not just basketball. Across multiple major sports. It really shouldn't be compared because the games and the rules have changed. You change the rules, the records should just remain.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you change a rule in something, you shouldn't be able to compare to a previous record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good... I like that take. I like that take on things. You're not comparing apples with apples at that point. At that point, you're changing the...
Right? You could say... You could maybe go ahead and say, you know, I believe this player of this current generation maybe is the best of this current generation and maybe even the best of all time. Okay? You can make a statement like that.
Mm.
That's fine. But to then say, because they've got these records over these players of a different generation, that shouldn't be a factor. That should not count.
Mm.
The records shouldn't be a factor. What they've achieved, sure. What they physically can do, their ability and skill set, sure. But when you start factoring in, oh, this person averaged more points per game than this person, and the original person played 20 plus years ago, shouldn't be a factor, right? You know, it just shouldn't happen. I think I keep going back to our interview with Louis Aguiar.
Mm.
And he talked about how, you know, people would make, linebackers would take runs at Montana. And he'd have to sit out portions of games because of the impacts he would take. And there wasn't even a penalty involved, right? They were just legal hits at the time.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can't touch a wide receiver, I mean, the rule is 5 yards, but I keep watching game after game, and it looks more like 2 yards to me. Referees seem to pull the flag the second you put your hand on a wide receiver's arm once they've left the line of scrimmage that could be holding.
Yeah.
Right? Just, it's none of this 5 yard. I mean, it's supposed to be 5 yards. It's supposed to be able to muscle them for 5 yards to slow them off their route. But
yeah, hand.
Almost appears as if you succeed, you're going to get a flag for holding.
You're going to get dinged. Yeah, because that's like hand-to-hand combat for me. But yeah, they interpret it a different way.
Yeah, right? So, I mean, that's got to count against you too. And of course, I mean, there's all the other rules about how close you can be to a receiver when they catch the ball, how quickly you can hit them when they go up for a ball, like a number of different things that have, you know, been factored in, at least on the NFL side of things.